You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a somewhat holiday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, on the coast of this wonderful show, and joining me for our weekly show right in between Christmas and New Year's from a hotel or a room or some kind of Airbnb in the middle of I don't know what state is Mr. Tony East. Tony, the Pacers went 1-2 this week, had a bunch of disappointing losses, but I think it's still a good week to beat the Raptors, right?
Yeah, the Raptors win was huge, especially because they were on a back-to-back. I know the Raptors were two, but especially coming off a back-to-back that night to be able to have the resilience to hang in there and win that game was so massive for their season. And just to show that they can't, and even, I know they lost the Heat and you didn't ask me about the Heat game, but just to show they can hang with these teams that could be their first round opponent was just so huge for like their outlook going forward.
Yeah, I think this was the week we realized they're on the level with most teams considering how many players were down for the Pacers. So on today's show, we are going to sort of recap the three games of the week. The Pacers just real fast beat the Raptors 120-115 in overtime on Monday, lost to the Heat on Friday night, 113-112, in a thrilling game, I would say, and got smoked by the Pelicans on Saturday on the back-to-back, and just maybe a game we'll try to ignore. Talk about those games and some of the impacts of injuries and whatnot in this first segment, then we'll do a whole Aaron Holiday segment second, and then we'll preview the week's games against the Sixers, Hawks, and Nuggets. But I think, right, to start with, we want to do a little bit of the impact of Brogdon's injury, in a sense, right? Because I think Monday – I think last week we talked about it and we thought if as long as everybody who was healthy the week before, it's like Lamb, we weren't sure about, but we thought that they could at least beat one of the Raptors or Heat, right? And they had neither, yep. They didn't have Brogdon, and they still beat one of the two teams. So I think that's kind of a win in itself.
Yeah, it was so funny that they're going back to what they had early in the year with the one guy comes back from injury and another guy gets hurt, right? With Brogdon going out in the Toronto game, right, when Lamb returns. But yeah, that game was interesting because I kind of thought with Brogdon out, you know, Lowry's been probably the best point guard in the East this year, or one of them. And to see, you know, that game, I thought, oh, without Brogdon, they might not have a chance, and Lowry was amazing. But we'll talk about Aaron in the future. He really stepped up and carried them down, especially down the stretch in that game.
Yeah. And I think the one thing I honestly think is with Brogdon's injury, it showed how deep this team was. Just because, I mean, even you saw on the bench, right, the impact that Sumner comes in and he didn't completely fill the Aaron Holiday role, but he did it well enough to basically keep them, I think, pretty much alive in that Raptors game. And the fact that it seems like they can pretty much like keep kind of shifting guys around and the chemistry is there no matter what, right? So, you know, one day Holiday starting at the two and then he's starting at the one. You got Sumner coming in off the bench. They weren't playing Sabonis as much in one of the games because Turner was in foul trouble, so Sabonis played more minutes. And it just seems to kind of all work, right? These players seem to mesh together in like a really, awesome way.
Yeah, Adam, I talked about that on Friday. I don't know if you heard it, but that was Sumner's first game without his brace. And when I talked to him after the game, he thought that was a really big deal. And that did help him, right? That was his first game shooting 50% since coming back. And he actually like was able to dribble and not just sit in the corner the whole game. And he was really helpful for the second unit, which was big because they, again, had to move Holiday into the starting five, which has happened a lot. But still, just to see how it changes, because Nate McMillan said many times he likes how a lot of his guards can play the one or the two, while Sumner, in this case, now can kind of switch between those two depending on who he's sharing the court with. And he was big for the bench, and they got literally just enough for everybody to win this game, considering it went to overtime. So a lot of credit for everybody for stepping up. Now.
Yeah, and I think a guy we have to mention is the way Miles Turner played too. I mean, he hit, what, 2 threes to start the game, hit a couple huge threes late, hit 5 threes total. I mean, he had probably his best offensive game of the year, and I thought it both sides of the floor, he was just maybe the best player in the quarter time.
Basketball Reference has game score, you know, where they're what did he get? I don't know how it's calculated, but it's generally okay. It matches how you feel like guys play. That was his best game of the year by game score.
Well, what was his game score at? Usually, like, anything over 20 is really good.
Yeah, 22.7, look at you.
Okay. I was nothing like the past. So, yeah, I mean, I thought he showed in that game, like, oh, if he plays like that in a playoff game, they're going to win almost every time, right? I mean, if he can make 5 out of 6 threes and just be like the defensive threat he was with his 3 blocks, I mean, he's
– we're talking about stuff. Him, right? Like he – I don't know what happened from a Philly game through – man, we need to pick like a point where it flipped. I think it was Boston, honestly. He played pretty well in that Boston game.
Yeah, I think he was like –
pretty much from Boston onward, like – it's just been like faster for him, you know? It's not like he's catching and thinking. And he, you know, every time someone asks him about what's changed for him, he's always like, you know, he's getting more comfortable playing the four and his confidence is back. I don't know if something happened because he did also talk about a conversation he had with Nate McMillan about his current role and stuff like that. I don't know what the actual turning point was, but he's been just so much better recently.
Yeah, I would say he was pretty terrible against the Pelicans, but most of the team was. So
yes, he was. I mean,
and he wasn't like – he wasn't overpowering his heat, but he was good enough. I mean, he had 13 points, but he was a good shooting night. But I think the difference for him, too, is, and you talked about this earlier, is he has the – I think he's got to learn he has the green light when he has the ball three every time. Yeah. I mean, he's making them at like 36% right now. He was down to 33. He was up at like 40 at one point. Like, especially a team, I think the Bucks game was the game kind of stood out to me because he was okay. That's probably his worst game of this stretch besides the Pelicans one. But he has to understand the Bucks are going to leave him wide open. And I think a couple of times he hesitated to shoot a three, and he just got to be confident and shoot that because he's going to make it most of the time, I think, at like a 36 to 40% range. And if he takes seven of those and makes, let's say, three or two to three of them, that's going to be enough to probably help the Pacers because he's going to be the one point offense where they're going to try to get the ball to him, right? That or maybe the team try to force the ball into TJ Warren's hand and they think they can stop him in a way, which I'm not sure they can, so that might be a fallacy in itself. But that's what teams are going to do, right? They're going to say the most inefficient shot in the Pacers lineup is going to be, you know, basically that Turner three, and maybe they let some kind of mid-range, but the Pacers are such a good mid-range floating team. I mean, between Holiday and Lamb and all those guys, they can hit that eight-foot floater, like, just it feels like 100% of the time. So they're going to force that play, and he's got to just take it and not, you know, think about it. If he's open by 10 feet, just take it. Don't worry about it. Just keep doing it. You know, he goes 0 for 3 to start. Keep shooting it because I think eventually it takes enough. He'll be at at least his season average.
He shot four more threes in every game since the Knicks game, almost at the beginning of the month. That's pretty crazy. I need to track that a little more closely. That's very nice. But, yeah, I think you're right about even getting that number to seven is great because there's been studies, maybe not studies, but like, people who work in the NBA say, obviously, percentage is important in how you defend a guy, but if they take a lot, you still have to get out there on the guy. And we know Turner will shoot if he has the confidence and agency to do so. He's doing so recently, and look, all of a sudden, he looks substantially better. So,
well, and he does have the ability to put the ball on the ground at times, right? I think we saw against the Pelicans, he had a really nice dunk. Maybe he had a couple of games, but he had a couple of nice dunks. But like, if he starts forcing guys to run after him when he gets the ball and he has, let's say, at least 5 foot of space and to run at him, he can pump fake and go to the rim then. I mean, he has that ability to do, but he has to kind of – it all starts with him shooting the three at a decent enough rate where it forces guys to react to him really well because, you know, he really is sort of a prototypical stretch four in a way, right? He's a guy who can kind of just sit in the corner, shoot threes, and doesn't need the ball run. And it fits into the Pacers – lineup pretty well. Now he's not really like going to get the ball and make a play. That's the one difference all the time. But he really does fit kind of the stretch four model of today, I guess.
He does, and he talks about playing the four when people ask him about it. You want to pivot to the other center first?
Yeah, and maybe a guy who didn't have as good of a week, I guess.
Adam, I wonder if Sabonis had some shrimp in Florida.
Oh, maybe that's why he did not have the best week. I mean, I'm not going to say he was terrible, but like,
okay, so he still is super helpful because he's getting a bajillion rebounds a game.
Oh, yeah. Right? 17 against the Raptors. I'm pulling the box against the Heat.
He was amazing against the Lakers. He had the 26-10 game. Since then, he's shooting 44% from the field, which given the shots he takes is very surprising.
Yeah,
he's still averaging 14 and 13 in that time. So, again, still helpful, but it's weird to see him missing as many times as he hit.
It feels like his touch is off. That's what it feels like. Because you watch him spin, and it's the back into the rim. Like it looks very like – I'm trying to think of the right center comparison, but like there are a lot of centers in the league who just don't have a touch around the rim, and Sabonis is not one of those, right? He's always had this, like, within 3 feet can really float the ball in, but I don't know if he's forcing it too much or whatnot. And I think he gets also a ton of contact and doesn't really get foul calls a ton like he should. Like, I mean, players would just smack the crap out of him, but that's the center. It's life of being a center.
Yeah.
But it feels like he just – his touch is off right now. I don't know if that's just a slump right now. He'll get out of it or whatnot. You know, he does usually have good January, if I remember right, so –
Yeah. I think he'll get out of it. It's just happening. And, like, some of it is, like, he was 6 of 13 against the Kings. That's like he has those games and then 50% against the Bucks, and then sans Brogdon all of a sudden is field goal percentage struggles, and they have great two-man chemistry. I don't think that's a coincidence. So I think that is some of this calculus. And against the Pelicans, it truly wasn't that bad. You know, he played fine that game. It just felt wrong because everyone was struggling and everybody's struggles are magnified. But that Heat game was probably his worst game of the year, right? You'd agree with that?
Yeah, by far. I mean, that game, he basically got played off the court. They didn't play him in the last, 3 minutes, give or take, because he I mean, part of it was Turner got fouled up early, so he played more minutes in the first half and whatnot. But, I mean, and they maybe could have used him in that second to last play we can talk about in a second. But he basically, like I said, got played off the court because he couldn't do enough offensively to be worth being out there. I mean, it made sense to go small and stretch the court out.
Yeah, and again, we're talking about such a small sample here that, like, five games, whatever, and we're focusing on one game. I think he'll recover, right? We saw Miles recover from his, whatever, 5-10 game slump. That obviously, we know Sabonis is amazing and will recover, and he's still super helpful with the rebounds. But it's interesting to see that how much good point guard play, like, kind of ties in how he does.
Well, and especially in this slump, he needs to what's the right way? This is, like, an important stretch of games. So him struggling now is amplified because they're now going to play, you know, basically the top of the East, right? They play the Raptors again soon. They play the Heat again soon. They play the Sixers. Yeah. Like, he has to play well for them to win. And when he plays like this and they lose to a game like he by 1 point, it really amplifies those.
If he goes 5 of 11 instead, they still win that game.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if he's in there late, he might pull a rebound and they don't get the extra tip in.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, that was.
All right, we'll talk about that possession.
Yeah, let's do that and then we'll take a break because we're.
The argument people have for Sabonis in his rebounding, and if the argument is Sabonis instead of Turner, I can't get on board with that because Jimmy Butler's take, Turner was right there, great contest, forced to miss, and then it was Kendrick Nunn right from the baseline who missed the reverse layup.
Yeah, and then was it
Drogic? And Turner contested that one and ended up flying behind the rim because of it. And then Jimmy Butler on the ground, like, shook his legs and made him trip and you know, Turner made both of those shots miss, so he still should have been out there. I think the argument is, should Sabonis have also been in next to him? Because I think everyone in the world knew Jimmy Butler was shooting that shot, right, the first one?
Yes, I think.
So you don't even have to have Sabonis on him. That's where I think, okay, maybe you could have had him out there, because you sneak him in on some guard who was clearly not going to shoot or whatever. But I understand why he wasn't in, because look what Turner did. He almost made it happen. They just could not grab the dang ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's borderlining unexcusable to have him in the last minute. I mean, you can just throw him on the guard and tell him to cut to the rim because Turner's going to be
– I don't think Sabonis is in the best defensive five. I totally get why he wasn't in for that.
No, I get it, but at the end of the day, it what happened made it seem like he should be in there, right? So I get why you think that, but based on the what happened, it was like, well, you needed one rebound because I think you – I'm trying to think who I would replace it there. So I'm looking at the five, right? So Sumner was the fifth guy out there, really?
Yeah, because right? of his length and defense, they put Sumner in.
But, like, wasn't he just sitting in the corner guy?
I think I would have had Sabonis in for Lamb.
Yeah. The way you do with Sabonis is you put him on the guy you know they won't put in the pick and roll, right? Yep. And they might even just try to pick on Sabonis anyways. But, like, because –
wasn't Duncan Robinson in the corner? You just stick Sabonis out there on him.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess that worked. But, like, if you look at the five guys on the court, too, the Pacers are actually outsized, really, outside of, right, for the first – this is, like, they're rarely outsized by teams. But if you look at it, like, Butler's bigger than everybody but Turner. Bam and Turner match up pretty well. Like, you could see why an offensive rebound was going to could happen because they just – Turner gets pulled from the rim because that's kind of what happens when guys get beat. Turner has to come out, and then he can't get the rebound or gets pulled away. That's, like, most of the Pacers' bad defensive plays are because Turner gets pulled away and then the guy makes an extra outlet pass or extra kick out or whatever, extra driving pass to a guy. So you needed Sabonis in there in the situation, but it just feels like you should have your best rebounder in a moment when you're gonna need a rebound, theoretically.
Yeah, the defensive possession doesn't end until you get the rebound, right?
Right. And so I get Sabonis isn't the best man-on-man defender, but he's their best defensive rebounder. So, and he might be one of the best in the league right now. So
they got what they wanted and forced a miss, and then they got what they wanted again and they still lost. I mean, that was a hard one.
Well, and then we should talk about the final play too.
Holiday, yeah, McDermott, they had to – I think they drew it up to get it to McDermott there, don't you?
Oh, definitely. Why would McDermott just came in the game randomly? Unless they were trying – they weren't
– he was open. He was – I get why Holiday took it. It wasn't like the worst look ever, but McDermott was
– the problem with Holiday, he got off balance. He actually had more space. Yeah. When he made that turn, he had actually probably a clear path to the rim.
You know how confident he had to be after his overtime against the Raptors, so I totally get why.
I get why he took the shot. But, I mean, to be honest – I think he was going to take the shot no matter what happened, right? He was thinking, I'm getting the ball, I'm going to the rim, I'm going to score. And his biggest thing when he made that turn is he should have, instead of going for the floater, he should have tried to kind of flip himself towards the rim and lay it off the glass. He had more space than he realized and more time. So,
yeah. It's not so bad that I'm like, oh, we have to criticize this guy. It's just like, dang, McDermott was there.
No, it was a good defensive play by the Heat, right? They basically knew they had a young, inexperienced guard, and they basically said, we're going to force him to this wrong side and trick him into basically having to take a shot with a bad hand.
Spoelstra special.
Yeah.
All right.
The thing is, if Holiday – I'm watching the play again. If Holiday turns back around, McDermott just cuts a little bit, and he's wide open for the game-winning three.
Yep.
So that's the only difference. But honestly, how many times is Holiday going to have this kind of game-winning play left? I mean, right? I mean, when Brogdon comes back, the ball's at Brogdon's hand on that play every time.
Yep.
And then when Oladipo comes back, it's Brogdon and Oladipo running some kind of action together. So.
Hey, and then there's another really clutch guy coming back.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, when people Twitter like freaking out about it, and I mean, they weren't really that bad, but like the whole thing about it's like about Holiday shouldn't take whatever take the shots. Like, he's not going to take that shot most of the time. I mean, he's only taking the shot because their two best clutch players are hurt. So it's like, and if he had hit that shot, I mean, it would have been, you know, the highlight of his career right now, going to Miami, hit a game winner over the second best team in the East right now. So,
well, let's talk about the highs of Aaron Holiday.
Yeah. So let's take a quick break and we'll do a whole Aaron Holiday segment. All right. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. So, I pulled up Aaron Holiday's last five games. So he started for five straight now because of the original Lamb injury where he played a little bit of two and then Brogdon got hurt after the last three. And his stats are bonkers. Tony, do you have some numbers in front of you? You want me to start reading them?
I do have them in front of me as well. I'm glad you picked the same time frame as me.
So he's averaging 16.6 per game and 5.6 assists. He's shooting 47 from the field and 50% from three and hasn't missed a free throw.
Nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, just the thing that makes him so much, like, more effective, I mean, he had this last year, was just so wildly inconsistent. I talked about how he's distributing, but, man, his pull-up three is so good.
His floater is so good.
His floater is so good.
I mean, he at some point, it stopped being, oh, Aaron Holiday's hot, and he started becoming, oh, this guy's an offensive weapon. Like, he just has pure offensive skills that few guys have.
I just, like – I know that I talked about on this show, like, what made him stand out to me as finally serviceable after his bad start was they figured out how to make him pass.
Yes.
And yes, we see the six assist number. He had the sexy double double against the Raptors. But like, when he's hitting pull up threes like he was, especially in that overtime, which, like, obviously those are gonna stand out to you, but he even had some against the Pelicans. He was pretty much the only good player in that game for the Pacers. It's like, man. This guy, just because he's so fast to get by anybody, just like has a chance, like he can just get to a spot anywhere. And that's special.
Yeah, he's gotten so good. He's now the sixth Pacer in double figures per game, which is awesome.
He's over 10? I didn't know that.
Yeah, 10.9.
He's at 25 by now.
Yeah, 25 wasn't help for him for sure. no, I think that, right, the two things I would say that have jumped in the most, and I agree with you on that passing, that's the first one, where like he finally has learned, like, I don't have to shoot every time. I'm going to get the ball back when I need to, and I can. If I can create an action to get somebody open, that's actually a better play, especially when he plays McDermott out there on the bench. That's always a better play, or like kind of running an action with Sabonis a bunch that earlier in the week. But the other thing with him is that, to me, he feels like TJ Warren with a 3-point shot, where he can get in the lane and slice dice and hit that 10-foot shot every time, but then he can pull it from three and just hit that at like an awesome rate, and that makes him just like an incredible offensive weapon.
All Warren's threes are catch and shoot, whereas exactly Holiday can catch, take a dribble around a screen or in transition, he'll walk it up, and if they're not respecting him, he'll let it fly, and there's a good chance it goes in. And that is such an unfair weapon. Like, I know that this is not a comparison. This is just like a parallel of how effective this is. Like, James Harden's whole shtick of why he's so good is his pull-up three is so nuts that you have to be right on him when he's doing those weird between the legs dribbles like 30 feet from the rim. And all of a sudden, he can drive and set up with their guys. Like, Aaron Holiday's not at that level, but that's the value the pull-up three has. The guys that can be a step closer to you, and you have the ball far away. All of a sudden, you can get more space around a screen or dribble past them when you're as fast as Aaron Holiday. And all of a sudden, he's creating lanes just everywhere for himself and other people. And that's what a good point guard can do.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see when he start pairing him with somebody like Oladipo or Brogdon, just how well he can do off the guys. Because his ball handling also is another thing that I've noticed. It's just been really awesome. Like, he just has a confidence and just a really good handle where he can, you know, go behind. Like, there was one play where he got the ball on a fast break and went behind his back and just completely threw the defender off in a way that just like, oh wow, he has that tool too. And when I'm just kind of imagining really him and Oladipo running some like super fat, you know, because they're both got kind of really.
I have a question about the him and Oladipo pairing. Have we ever seen it before?
What, Holiday and?
Because didn't Aaron only play when Vic was hurt last year?
Well, and even Aaron Holiday playing last year, he's not this player he was.
Yeah, well, right.
That sounds right.
I was thinking about that, though. I think that, man, they're just so fast and quick. I don't know how fast Vic will be now, but
they could be nuts. I mean, I think Vic will still be fat. What is he's going to be like come in and not be able to like move. I mean, he's we saw him run that 70 yards. He looked decently fast.
Yeah, and we know we're only a little over a month away from that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing too is, right, we haven't seen Vic and Brogdon either, and just the three of them together as an offensive, just like, I mean, what's the bonus too? I mean, yeah, I'm starting to kind of salivate a little bit over those four guys.
Imagine the afterthought of your offense is 17 point a game scored DJ one.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's crazy.
And what I'm starting to think is the way Holiday plays with the bench and the confidence he plays with is he's hopefully going to be a good playoff player, which the Pacers haven't had a really just like awesome bench offensive player in I don't know how long. I mean, they certainly haven't had the last 2 years, right? I mean, it basically survived the victim. Maybe Sabonis was that way, but
the last 2 years, like 2 years ago against the Cavs, their best, well, I guess Sabonis, but he didn't do that well.
No, he wasn't as good as now either.
Lance. And last year it was nobody. Everybody was bad.
Well, did Corey Joseph start by the end of last year? He did, right?
Corey Joseph came off the bench. He was all right. You're right. He did well on Kyrie.
He's not this. I remember, like,
no, he's not this.
Aaron Holiday wouldn't be stuck running around the court trying to shoot a 18-foot like step back jump shot at the end of the shot clock. He would figure out how to get at least some clean look before that happened.
I think Corey Joseph might be the most annoying pest to play against on the planet, despite having absolutely no offensive skills.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So defensively, I mean, you're better at this. But what are you seeing Holiday on the defense? Do you think he looks decent, right? Well,
right, when you're a rookie, the game's faster. So you're just going to get better as a sophomore with reads. And then with Aaron specifically, like point guard two can see the game. As it slows down for him, we can see with his passing and decision-making in general. That kind of translates to both ends, right? I talked about that with Ben Simmons, with other people not on the show. Like last year, like Ben Simmons is so smart and just sees everything that even on defense, he can make the same reads just in reverse. And I think for Aaron, that's coming true a little bit. And he's getting a ton of steals now. I think he averaged a little over one per game in this stretch, and he's been starting like he's, you know, he's not his size limits how effective he can be. That's true for every guard, and but he's still been better this year, and that's, you know, improvement is good, and that bodes well for him going forward.
Right, and he also doesn't play small. I think that's like you feel like
he has 6'7" wingspan.
Yeah, but like, and right, so he doesn't feel like he's small. Like I think at times I felt like Collison was small out there. I don't feel that with Aaron Holiday right now. Maybe it's because he's younger and got. Just faster, but it feels like Holiday like is on a. It's actually because of his speed and length is actually, you know, above.
I actually never thought we gave Collison enough defensive credit, but Aaron's better than him still, so doesn't matter.
Before we end this, so what do you think this Aaron Holiday ceiling is? Because every time I watch him, I'm trying to think this gets higher and higher for what he could be. I guess.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard to figure out, right? With Brogdon and Vic on this team, because his role is gonna be hard to project. But like he could. And he could be a solid starter, I think. And that's great for a guy you draft, 23?
Yeah, 23 overall, yeah. I mean, they've – after missing on what – Gogo, we won't say, but missing on the pick before him. Yeah, this works.
Yes, indeed. And trading the pick before that, right? So your three-year span of first-round picks, you just have to hit one if you're a mid-market team. And look at that. I think you can safely say right now they hit the Holiday. Like, that's how good –
So my thing with Holiday is, does he have a ceiling where he could be like an all-star level point guard? That's what I'm trying to think. I don't know. I mean, I don't know right now. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know yet. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know yet. Because, I mean, maybe, you know, I think, right, like imagine his numbers will be a little inflated if he could play alongside guys like Brogdon and Vic, but he won't. So I don't know.
But he's probably going to play as a bonus the rest of his career.
Barring a trade in the next two seasons that, you know, maybe someday that will come to get him more minutes. I can't project him playing a ton with those guys.
I guess my thing is now Aaron Holiday is for sure untradeable, right?
Oh yeah,
I would hang up the phone
in the clubhouse for like six man of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hang up the phone if somebody called about Aaron Holiday. They were doing it last year.
Once again, the Pacers own us in foresight by X-naying a Conley trade.
I know. That's like the biggest like no, we're not doing that. No.
Look, I get mad at Herb getting involved in trades just because I feel like he's getting in other people's.
Herb is not a valley talent, man. He's the one common.
He might have saved the day here.
from the Reggie Miller draft all the way up to Aaron Holiday draft, this is Herb has been the one common denominator of this team.
Yeah, maybe, and that'd be a fun interview. So Herb Simon on basketball operations.
Maybe someday we can get him. One thing I would say about Holiday too is because I think his ceiling maybe is an all-star level point guard someday. I mean, all point guards are pretty deep positions, so it's, I mean, it's hard. And I guess we're not gonna do it now because we ran out of time, but we'll talk about eventually the all-star and the Pacers and how it may broaden. I think having his best year might not even make the team. But I wonder, as kind of the sixth man, it really changes the ceiling of this team, I think, next year. And that's the biggest difference, right? Because if you have a guy who you deem as like maybe your third best player or fourth best player, and he's coming off your bench, I mean, that's the recipe for a championship team, right? I mean, that's the Manu level player. That's the, I mean, I'm thinking back in the day, like the Joe Johnson playing for the Suns when they were championship level team, like having a young bench guy who can basically be like the best player on the court at times makes your team just like better than most teams.
It sure does.
Yeah.
It sure does, Adam.
Well,
I had a thought just now and I totally forgot what it was. I started thinking of past champions when you said that, and I forgot what I was going to actually say.
Well, I mean, basically, right, the recipe to win a championship, right, is to have a top five player and then have a player who falls in like the 20 to 30 range, and then having a third guy who might be in 20 to 30 or at least is like off the bench is awesome. I mean, that's kind of like a lot of the good, great teams have had that. I mean, there's obviously LeBron, sort of the exception to that, to his championships because he's just awesome in himself. But like the Warriors, it was Sean Livingston in a way. I mean, the Heat didn't really have anybody, but the Spurs, it was Manu. The Mavs, I don't know, that team is such a weird team. I can't remember who came off the bench. Like, I think
Speaking of awesome teams, I believe the Pacers play a top two team in both conferences this week.
I think top five. But
Going off standings. I like it.
Yeah, juicy. I mean, that's the standings. That's the only numbers we have. All right, let's take one more break, and then we're going to preview this week's games. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, Tony, so the Pacers have a pretty big game to end the year, right?
Yeah, huge. Sixers are the only team in, like, the non-Milwaukee portion of the top of the East that the Pacers haven't beat yet. That'd be the last team that, like, all right, they can do it. They can beat these guys.
So I've got an interesting stat for you for this game.
Okay.
Interesting stat. So it's a home game, right? So the crazy thing I have is that the top six in the East at home are 87-15.
I saw Denari tweeted that. That's insane.
It's insane. That's like, what, 88%?
That is insane. That's a Heat game that they almost won. They're like 14-1 at home, and the Sixers have lost one game at home. Insane.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only team of the top like five outside Milwaukee, the next five, to go on the road and beat one of those teams is when Boston went into Toronto and won. And that's
on Christmas Day, yeah.
That was
the Heat won in Philly. That's Philly's only home loss.
Okay, so that's another one. But like, it really, I mean, to beat one of these top teams at home is like an accomplishment, and so I think that's where this game maybe.
The Pacers lost by one in Philly, or by two in Philly, and by one in Miami. Right there.
And obviously the other thing that sort of tilts is whether Brogdon plays or not, which we don't know yet.
Yes, it does. I think having, 3 days off? Sunday and Monday, 2 days off?
Yeah, he hasn't played in over a week. He will be about 8 days off.
Like, this is all conjecture, but, I mean, he's a game-time decision twice. Like, 2 days off should get him there, right?
Yeah, I mean, right, he played last Saturday, right? That was the last game he played, was Saturday.
Yes, it was.
Like the 17th, or not 75, like the
15th. So he's had over a week. I think he'll be good to go, especially given the magnitude of importance of this game. But I digress. Because don't they only play the Sixers one? I might be wrong about this. Don't they only play the Sixers one more time after this? And I know I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but tiebreaker's on the line, Adam.
Nope, they play Philly twice. They play them January 13th and then in March. So you're wrong. Sorry.
Okay,
sorry.
Good. Sorry. Not still important, but less
important. Oh, definitely still important.
Because still important, but less important. The Sixers are really good at them. We saw that last time they played, right? Tobias Harris has been unbelievable in December after a sluggish start. And having him being a serviceable finisher means they can just get away with these massive lineups. Guys can all do something very special.
Yeah, and so the only guy for the Sixers that might not – it's probably not going to play, right? Matisse Thybulle was out 2 weeks as of last
season. Yeah, he got a knee something.
Yeah, knee sprain, bone bruise, so I doubt he's going to play. But he's, what, their eighth, ninth guy. I mean, he's a good
rookie. But his defense is super good, right? He played okay against the Pacers the first time, if I recall
correctly. Yeah, he's kind of the what-if for this year's pick, but that's another discussion for another time.
Yeah, he might be their trade to, like, become a finals favorite from the East.
Yeah. So, for this game, do we predict Embiid has 15 free throws, 20 free throws? how high are we going up? I mean – I'm going to pull up his first game. I'm trying to remember how much it was.
I'll go with 12.
12? So the first game they played, I got to pull it up real fast. But
he was 15 for 15.
Was he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Last year he had a bunch of high free throw games. I mean, if I remember right, when they beat the Sixers, it's because Embiid plays better, doesn't play. And that's
I remember thinking after the first game, I was like, man, if the Sixers just shoot like they shot like above 90% on like 40 attempts. It's like if they just shoot like not like an average game from the free throw line, the Pacers win, which that's not a thing. Like that's not an excuse or anything like that. They're clearly good at getting to the line, but they're a 74% normally team from the free throw line. It just happened.
Yeah, it's Embiid is he might be the best in the league at it, just getting turnovers to bonus to fake on the pump thing every time.
Thrills him over and over.
I mean, you got to imagine in practice this week, was a Popeye or Danberg is basically berating those guys.
Danberg really wants this game.
do not jump on any Embiid shot. Do not go for his 3-point fake. Nothing. Just keep your feet to the ground. He's better off just letting him shoot if you stay on the ground than actually trying to contest the shot most of the time.
Yes. Exactly. And that's like, I think that's something that the Sixers are trying to figure out is some teams have been doing better at keeping Embiid kind of away from the basket where he can't really do that as much. And that's been hurting them a little bit.
Yeah. And then I think the other thing in this is obviously Simmons, right? I mean, his defense was critical to the Sixers game last time.
I want to see you now, Adam. Sorry.
What?
If the Sixers shoot their season average against the Pacers the first time, they have 5 less points just from free throws, and they won by 3.
Yeah, but I think Simmons is still the other big.
Yes, he is. I just wanted to finalize that.
Okay, that's mine.
Yeah, Simmons is insane. Like, I think he's the only guy averaging his point, rebound, assist combo this season.
What's he at? I'm looking.
14.4 points, 7 rebounds, 8.7 assists.
Oh man,
I mean, there's 8 and 40% of his threes too.
This team's starting five is really good. It's the strength of the Pacers was last time is the bench. Can the bench?
When your worst starter is Josh Richardson, you have a really good starting five.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that's kind of what the Pacers are going to be.
You made fun of me for they finally have a bench guy in Korkmaz who can actually like help them.
Korkmaz is more recent, right? He's playing really well with the last 10.
Yeah, his shots falling finally now.
So the question is that actually a consistent thing or just a hot streak thing? And I don't know. That's the question probably can't answer.
That is tough. Right.
Right. He's playing an 8-game stretch where he's been.
This was true in Philly. Like, the way the Pacers can catch up in this game is good bench play. And because, especially the Thibault, like, the Sixers bench is pretty weak. So you got to capitalize on those minutes. And they do a good job. Brett Brown deserves a lot of credit for. They're not going to go like the Pacers do with these 4 bench guys at the same time. But you can still pick on the Mike Scotts, the Korkmazes, the whoever, Trey Burke, James Ennis types, more so, you know, than. They're starting five, who are all huge and big.
Well, and that's why, and this is why I'm going to do this first. My X factor is whether Malcolm Brogdon plays or not, because I think putting Holiday on the bench gives them just that much more of an edge versus him in the lineup, which he'll be good still, but like it just that much more. And if Brogdon does play, I think the Pacers could win this game and probably should at home beat the Sixers.
Well, I don't know if they should. They're really good, but
yeah, but they're on their level. They were on their level last time. They should have probably won that last game. So. I think at least
this is a dumb Brogdon thing, but he's 6'5", where last year Collison was 6 foot, generously 6 foot, and like that 5 inches is huge against a team like the Sixers, where they're just built on being massive. And all of a sudden, if your smallest guy on the Pacers is 6'5", that advantage is lessened substantially.
The Pacers, right, are probably the second biggest team in the league behind the 76ers. Starting
behind,
right. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but the Pacers basically start 6'5 guy, 6'5 guy, 6'8 guy, 7 foot guy, and it's another 7 foot guy.
Yes.
So exactly. It's about what the Sixers do too, except Ben Simmons is 6'10.
Yeah. But I think we're sleeping on Josh Richardson, who did not play the first time he's
suited. Well, why don't you do your X factor first, and I just did my X factor.
Aha, you're killing me.
I'm sorry, I'm getting you off your flow. Just
I'm picking the same guy who was awesome in Philly last time, TJ Warren, because. It's clear that they're going to put they're going to put Simmons on the point guard. They're going to put Embiid on a center. And Horford will guard the other center, right? So that means that of their 2 weakest defenders, well, I guess, let me rephrase that. It's Warren if Tobias Harris is guarding Warren, which I think will happen, and it's Lamb if Tobias Harris is guarding Lamb, because that is the matchup you can actually find a way to score on, as we saw first time Warren did well with that matchup. Richardson's a good defender, so if they switch Richardson onto Warren, it's up to Lamb to get the buckets. But whoever Harris is guarding between those two wings has to be able to get up good look.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean,
Warren did great of that the first time, and he kept them in the game with his massive scoring. And obviously, Brogdon was amazing as well. which his size was a big factor there. And he got to the free throw line a few times. But I think whichever one of the biggish wings that they're going to start, and even Lamb had 15 on 5 of 9 shooting. You know, they're going to have to.
Really?
They're gonna have to
every be able to starter was good except for Turner.
Huh?
Every starter was good last time except for Turner.
Except right. for Turner. Yep.
And Sabonis, you could say he probably because he fouled out, which is a huge issue too. But yeah.
Yeah, Turner 1 for 8. That was the first game that was so bad that this course on Twitter finally became oh no.
Yeah, well, it happens every against Philly to feel like.
Oh no, it does.
But maybe we got Turner in a hot kind of streak right now, so it'll be okay. Okay, so you went your non. Embiid Butcher, I'm assuming is Richardson.
Not Embiid Butcher, yes. We know what he is going to do. Tobias Harris, mine.
Okay, not Richardson. I thought you wanted to talk about Josh Richardson real quick.
I don't think he's the Butcher. I just think he's starting over Korkmaz, who started for them last time.
Yes, that would be big, I think.
The difference is that Richardson is good on offense and defense, and Korkmaz can only shoot, basically. But no, mine's Tobias Harris. He's been awesome in December. And against the Pacers last time, if you'll recall, he had 22 points. If they can't stop him, they have no chance because he is literally their third option on offense. So,
mine is Al Horford, who I assume will be guarding Sabonis. Who would he guard? Really? I don't remember who guarded.
Yeah,
last
I think he'll guard Sabonis.
Well, would they want to put Embiid out and Turner in the corner though?
Well, we have evidence that Horford can make Sabonis literally the worst post player in basketball.
That's true. When you do that, you stymie the Pacers' offense completely.
Yeah,
that's fair.
But you might be right. I mean. There's no wrong answer, but Embiid and Horford, that's insane.
Well, because it seems like if you do that, then you open the – I guess, but Horford can still protect the rim too. So, I mean, that's not really
– Yeah.
Horford's such a dynamic player still at the age of, like, 34.
So good. 15 yeah. points on only 8 shots with no free throws last time they played.
Yeah. But so Horford is mine.
Yeah. He's great pick.
He is a Pacer killer. Been time in, time out.
He is a 3-and-D post player, and he is always good against the Pacers.
Yeah. So the Pacers win or lose, what do you think?
I just can never pick a win against Philly. They just do not match up well, which no one does, but still.
Mine's a win contingent on Brogdon playing.
Okay.
If Brogdon doesn't play, they're not going to win. I mean, this team is too good, and they have too many massive advantages where, like, against the Heat, the point guard, the Pacers probably still might have had the advantage even because Drogic is so kind of beat up at this point. Aaron Holiday might have actually been an advantage, but if they have Aaron Holiday playing over Brogdon, have to play Simmons, they're going to lose that matchup most of the time.
So, Adam, tied for the best record in the NBA over their last 10 games, the Denver Nuggets.
Ooh, so this is the first time we see I guess we saw the Lakers and the Clippers, but
we saw the Lakers and Clippers.
So never mind. Obviously, the first time we see a really good West Coast team, but we see the next level of West Coast teams that necessarily isn't the Lakers and Clippers. Let's put it this way. I think the LA team and Milwaukee are on like the three best teams in the league, and the Pacers are winning this next tier. This is the first time they play a West Coast team in that tier.
Yeah, maybe I put Denver in like. I put Denver and Philly in tier 2 and then tier 3 being every. Well, maybe Miami too.
I put Philly right now. They keep losing too many stupid games.
They do. They keep trying to prove me wrong.
I might have put Houston ahead of Denver just in terms of like what I trust, I guess.
The Nuggets are really good, and they had a guy that started off poorly, and Nikola Jokic, who's really stepped it up, and that's it. They're just really good because he's really good.
Yeah, so
lazy of me to say, but when you're averaging 18, 10, and 7, you can do a lot.
So some injuries. I don't think Bol Bol plays that much, but Paul Millsap is day-to-day with a knee injury. He didn't play Saturday against the Grizzlies.
Oh, that'd be huge if he was out.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if it's day-to-day, he could play by Thursday. I'm assuming they're on a West Coast road trip, right? So
East Coast, Adam.
East Coast road trip. I'm sorry. Flip that around. So this is the start of that. So they play on New Year's Eve by the Patriots at Houston.
Indy,
then they go
– at Washington, yeah.
Indy, Washington. So it's kind of only the second game of this West of an East Coast road trip. I guess kind of East Coast. They end up back in Dallas at some point. But so we'll see if that affects them. If not, you know, being, you know, I guess we'll see how fun Indy, I guess how fun Houston. I guess Houston's pretty fun on New Year's Eve. So I'm sure they'll be kind of drunk and hungover by the time they get to Indy on the first. It maybe is the hope.
So the Nuggets are fascinating to me because Jamal Murray, we know what he can do. Speedy setup guy, can score. Fits okay with Jokic. Jokic is obviously a superstar. And the rest of their players are just kind of like pretty good defenders who are methodical and don't make a ton of mistakes. And that is a good basketball team. It's just so – like, you look at the list of names outside of those two guys, and you're like, it's amazing that this team is as good as it is. But they are. They're all really solid, good NBA players.
To me, this team reminds me of, like, it would be like the Bucks, but without, you know, a guy who's like – maybe a guy who's like the eighth best player and not the best player in the league. Right? I mean, it's still a really good team. A really good team, but where do you rank Jokic?
About top eight, where you said.
Okay. But I mean, like, that's
what it feels one like. Spot behind Embiid, wherever you have Embiid.
Yeah. I guess that's what it feels like. Right? They're a really kind of deepish team. They've got a lot of good players. They're actually pretty well coached, I think, too. They just don't have that like amazing number two or like that like unbelievable number one.
So some impact stats, I'm going to talk about Will Barton, Adam. This is insanely nerdy. Some impact stats paint Will Barton as like top 15 impact guy this year. Not that he's a top 15 player, but his on-off numbers are insane because he's been playing good defense. He's been hitting his threes at a career best rate. He's been rebounding like crazy, and he's their third option on offense. And Will Barton is not awesome, but doing all those things kind of epitomizes what I think of the Nuggets as like this low mistake team that can revolve around this superstar, and Will Barton is awesome for them. So him and Gary Harris kind of both fit that mold of just like the perfect fit around Jokic kind of guys who can do just enough damage to make them beat literally anybody.
I agree with you. Can we do a throwback to a really Tony bad cold take?
Oh, my Gary Harris Vic take.
Yeah. So what, 2017 was that?
Pre-Vic ever playing a game for the Pacers. I would like to note that.
I think you still said it going into the Denver
actually, game. Actually, no. Yeah. He had played about a month and a half for the.
Yeah, when they played the Nuggets early December range of 2017, and you thought Garris was as good as Vic, and Vic scored 45 points.
Yeah, that was probably the worst take I've had on the show to date. Right?
I think that might be, to be honest. I mean, we had a lot of bad takes, so it's hard. But that one was egregious and just hilarious. Really
I appreciate. See, this is why you guys should side with Adam in most of our fights. And Gary Harris is
usually long term. I just short term. I usually end up winning.
Gary Harris has not been hitting his threes this year. Well, he's okay at it. You know, 34% is not bad, but like he's kind of not anything for them on offense if those aren't going in. And he'll shoot better in his hometown, but he's kind of just been there for them.
Yeah, I think his ceiling is, we've seen it. You know what I mean? He's a good player.
And
he's a starting shooting guard in this league or whatever he's playing at.
Very helpful and useful for playoff teams, but. Not like some awesome thing.
He's not your number two. If you're number two, you're not that good. I mean, not that he's number two on this team even, but
he's our number four, which is great.
Yeah, that's why this team is really good. But he's a player who, if you could upgrade it, you probably would try to in a way, right? If you could get him, create him and somebody for Jrue Holiday, for example, you would do it. But he's still
Nuggets,
really good.
The Nuggets bench is pretty interesting. Jeremy Grant, super athletic, awesome defender. Monte Morris,
like
literally
a lot.
Never turned. What?
Guy we both like a lot, I think.
Love Jeremy Grant here. Unlocked
on the Pacers 2 years ago. If young
Monte Morris, I don't think he's ever turned the ball over in his life. Mason Plumlee is the only good Plumlee left, and I love Mason Plumlee for some reason. And then they get, you know, they kind of rotate through some guys, but they're trying to get Michael Porter minutes now, who I loved in a couple of drafts ago. And Malik Beasley plays well off the bench for them, so they have like serviceably good bench, and they're like the Sixers where they just mix and match it well with the starters. So. It's going to be harder to get that advantage. You're going to have to do well against the Nuggets starters in this game.
So can I give you my X factor for this game?
Yes, you can.
So I think, if I remember right, the Nuggets, a lot of times, it's a lot of teams, but it comes down to how well they shoot the three against the Pacers. Because I remember, was it the game in London 2 years ago where they just went like off from three and scored 140?
Yeah, it's
nice. I think that three-point percentage will be the key. And that is the key for most Pacers games, so it's not like anything new. But the Nuggets shoot, you know, let's say between like 25 and 35%. The Pacers have a shot at winning. Nuggets shoot above that if the Pacers lose, probably by like 15 even.
They have to get Jamal Murray uncomfortable, because if he, you know, he's kind of like Jokic is obviously their passer, but he's like their initiate the sets, kind of set guys up and pick and roll point guard guy. And if he's uncomfy or if his passes are slightly inaccurate because of pressure, then all of a sudden their shooting will be worse. And their second option will be mitigated, and Jokic can obviously do some incredible things. But so, I think if you slow down Murray, you can really cripple the Nuggets.
Do you think they put Turner on Jokic and try to have him play on the perimeter?
Yeah, he'll have to defend Jokic like 10 feet from the rim, because that's where Jokic operates and that's what he does.
Yeah. So what is your X factor, I guess? I already did mine.
Oh, man. Their wing defense is really good, so I'm going to actually pick Brogdon here. Murray can't really defend really well. He's got the size and know how to make this defense bend. And Jokic, for all we love him, and he's smart. And we talked about how smart players can be in the right spots on defense, but he's really slow. And you can use that to your advantage to get open shots. So I think if Brogdon does play, which I imagine he'll definitely be back by this game, it's up to him to get something going.
Yeah. So should we do non-Jokic butchers, or should we just
both pick Jokic and get it over?
Well, how about you pick Jokic, I'll pick somebody else. Jokic.
I've never seen a player warp a defense without moving as much as Nikola Jokic.
It's so mean.
It's so mean, but it's true. He just like catches, turns, does a little ball fake, and hits a cutter, and all of a sudden they score. It's like, well, nobody moved except for the cutter, but it always worked. He's just so good. I mean, 7 assists per game as a center. Like we talk about, people have always mentioned to me on Twitter and stuff, like, oh man, it'd be awesome if Sabonis could be like a Jokic level passer. He will never be a Jokic level passer. Jokic's best passing man ever, ahead of Sabonis' dad, unfortunately.
Wow, that's a hot take. I mean, I never watched Sabonis' dad either, so I don't think we can say that for sure.
But I haven't watched him a ton either, admittedly, but I mean, the numbers say, which again, I'm young and I can't go back and be alive for Arvidas's.
Well, most of them can't watch it because he was playing in, what, Eastern Europe or Russia.
Right.
No one even knows how he was playing.
But the guy I can easily availably watch has the numbers and skills for me to say it's him. But I understand if older people want to tell me I'm wrong. And I have no argument against him. But, yeah, he's amazing. And he'll be amazing.
He's basically a point guard in a center's body, but also like an out-of-shape center in a way. So, like, it's really weird to watch. But he's awesome. Like, I remember in the playoffs last year, watching him being like, he played when that Portland game. He played like 50 minutes or something crazy like that, and like I thought for sure he was gonna like just tire out at some point, but he just kept going.
Yeah,
and made great passes. He won the game for them. So I mean, he
can't run out of energy if he doesn't ever move.
That's fair. He was sweating out pretty hard. Remember right at the end of the game,
he was.
He was just drenched in sweat, but he seemed good. You know, he was fine. I think my X factor is Paul Millsap, and I think him playing
great player.
Yeah, to me he kind of is like. I mean, I know they played together in Atlanta. So, but he's like Al Horford a little bit, right? He has some of the same skill sets, not quite as good on defense, maybe a little better offense, to be honest. But he just has that kind of that old man game in a way that just like just will be a pass to Sabonis all night.
Yeah, he's a great player.
Yes.
He's an awesome defender. He'd be really good on the Pacers, actually. He's an awesome defender. He can shoot. He's shooting 46% from three this year, Adam. Isn't that nuts?
Great.
He can pass. He's got a mid-range game. He's just super good at a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's
just he's too old to play a lot of minutes, which is the only thing holding him back from being like a massive impact player.
You know what's crazy? Him and Horford played on the same team at one point, and that team was actually one of the best teams in the league.
They won 60 games.
I know. It's amazing why Atlanta even blew up that team. I mean, they would need to get some more young guys now, but there was a way to rebuild around Millsap and Horford, and then bring in somebody else, make it work.
All right, let's see how quick I can do this last team, Adam.
Well, wait, win or loss, real quick.
I think they can beat the Nuggets at home.
I do too. I think again, going back to that 14-3 home record, I think at least they're gonna win one of the two against Philly or Denver.
I agree.
So okay.
All right.
So they played this team twice already, right?
Yeah, so here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
Trae Young is amazing. Everyone else sucks. The Hawks haven't won since December 8th, and they're on a back to back. So the Pacers went done. Okay, good job.
Yeah. Well, what were the scores of the last games real quick before we
They just... won 105-104 at home, and then they played awesome and just I forget the score, but they beat them pretty handily in Atlanta.
110-100. Yeah. So real quick, Butcher Trae.
The game was not that close.
Butcher Trae Young will probably have 25 plus points. Maybe a semi butcher would be like John Collins, give or take, right?
Yeah, that's the only thing that worth talking about is Collins is back, but he's not even helping them.
Well, and the question is, Trae Young has an ankle injury. He'll probably end up playing by next week, but who knows?
Yeah, I think the reporting is he'll be back.
Yeah. X factor. Basically, you could pick any Pacer to.
This is the laziest game coverage we'll ever do, but they've already played this team twice, and they suck. They're so bad.
The Hawks are going for James Wiseman, or whoever the best player in the draft is right now.
No, it's not James Wiseman.
I think it is, but you can.
It's Anthony Edwards.
Okay, whatever, Tony.
I bet James Wiseman goes after pick five when it's all
said. I believe it because he didn't play college, and that's going to screw him a little bit. That always does.
Oh, well, okay. You're right. That is unfair.
It hurts him a little bit. Not a lot, but it hurts him by like 5 or 10 spots. Usually they don't play.
Yeah, Collins is this good role man, but like his defense isn't good, and no one's really trying. I think that Hawks kind of have some infighting because I think Trae wants better teammates. I don't know that, but I just get the vibe that, like, you know, Trae had the team conversation, and then Chris Haynes had to write that, like, Lloyd Pierce maybe on the hot seat, even though he's a second-year coach on a young team that sucks kind of deal. It's like, how does that get out? You know, something's happening. I think something is brewing in Atlanta, and obviously their team is bad, but that doesn't help.
I mean, you know your team is bad when, let's see, the guy who's arguably going to be – who won Coach of the Year last year, I think, right? Or is going to be Coach of the Year this year maybe is on another team, was on your team.
Yeah.
Let him go. And then you had two guys who are still amazing. Like, there was a way to rebuild this team. I know maybe they wouldn't have gotten Trae Young. That's a question. But, like, could you imagine the team had Budenholzer, Trae Young, Horford, and Millsap still? I mean, that would be like, amazing. I mean, that team – but they probably couldn't have pulled that off. So, I get why. But, like, they should have kept
it. The other thing here for the Hawks, and shout out to Cole Zwicker who saw this tweet, like, every time someone tweets about Lloyd Pierce being on the hot seat, he replies with, Alex Len is their best center.
Yeah, I mean, the team is
it's like, it's not Lloyd Pierce's fault that they just have a junk roster.
No, and they're going to be junk probably next year too, because there's not a ton of free agents. Either that or they're going to overpay for bad free agents. It's going to be another bad move. But two more good picks and then a decent.
This is how rebuilding works.
Yeah, you do. You have a couple free agent classes where you get – maybe you don't get the best guys, but you get a couple, Jeremy Lamb, TJ Warren-type players, a couple drafts and draft picks, and your team is decent, and a playoff team, and 8 seed, and maybe one of the draft picks becomes a superstar next to Trae Young, because I think Trae Young has to be your second best player to be the really good team, and, you never know.
Trae Young played the game of his life, and they still lost, and that is why the Hawks will not beat the Pacers.
Yeah. Trae Young just wants his Klay Thompson. That's what he needs.
That's what he needs. I have nothing to say besides that. If Trae Young's best game – of the season can't beat the Pacers, the Hawks just can't beat them. They just can't.
I assume we both think the Pacers will win by, 10, 15 points?
10 or 15 points, yep.
Yeah, even though it's in Atlanta, I think this is so. You think they go 2-1 this week or 1-2?
2-1.
Okay.
I don't know how. Yeah. My gut says lose to Philly, beat Denver and Atlanta, but I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't do it yet, but Vic is – we got a timetable for Vic real quick. We didn't talk about that yet.
Didn't you talk about it earlier this week?
Yeah, but we didn't do it together. Should we just say something real fast? I mean, that was like the biggest news of the week.
It's nice to have a concrete thing, and I mean, I have no reason to doubt Woj. And McMillan said at practice, hey, the team doesn't have a timeline yet, but I think that's Vic's timeline now that we know Woj is reporting.
So that makes me
even more confident that it's true, ironically.
It feels like they go on a 5-game West Coast trip. From the
and then he comes back. That's what I thought,
back
too.
Back the 29th against Chicago, maybe the first against the Knicks.
That's what I thought, too.
Come back against Chicago Knicks, two easy games, maybe get a little going, and then a big Toronto back-to-back.
But I think if they're rolling, just hold them out through the All-Star break. Who cares?
So what's the All-Star break? What day is it?
The 12th? It starts the 12th, yeah.
Yeah, I would say, though, they might want him back for the Toronto games.
That's fair.
that's the team that probably
went out against
five at least. With.
Poetic. Yeah. So.
That would be poetic, right. In a way.
Adam, so. I got nothing else for you today.
No, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My butcher is Trae Young. My X factor is anybody.
Well, we kind of did that already. So, it's going to be a good, hopefully a good end to 2019, and hopefully a better 2020 for the Pacers. You can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers Podcast, or at Locked On Pacers. Sorry.
Hit the announcement here. Adam will be gone this week, so it's just me the rest of the week.
So enjoy that, guys. Next year, not to berate Tony too much for his terrible things. You can follow Tony at TeastNBA. Follow me at FreeMadam5. The Auburn's Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll see you guys again.